It's Tuesday, April 2nd, and Havana Syndrome has returned. We start here. Following an explosive report, the Pentagon admits another American reported mysterious symptoms.
To him, it just smells like a cover-up.
Some are convinced this is the work of Russia, but the White House isn't going there. Flipping burgers in California is now worth $20 an hour.
I'm ultimately thinking about selling or closing my business.
We'll ask an economist if businesses can afford the new law. And over-the-counter opioids aren't legal, so why is this?
If it wasn't for this little bottle right here, Christopher would still be here.
Why parents say their kids were killed by what they call gas station heroin. From ABC News, this is Start Here. I'm Brad Milkey. If you've never heard of Havana Syndrome, it's going to sound like something out of a very thrilling, very fictional spy novel. But people who have lived it say it's all too real and it's absolutely devastating.
A mysterious illness has been impacting CIA agents and diplomats.
Symptoms and findings consistent with what looks like a mild traumatic brain injury.
I've had a splitting headache, a migraine headache in the back of my head. It's a headache that never goes away.
So back in 2016, the U.S. government is getting along with Cuba better than it has in decades. We got more and more government workers hanging out there, paving the way for improved relations. When some of them start describing this bizarre type of pain, a pain in their heads, deep in their skulls, accompanied by a ringing in their ears, unlike anything they've ever experienced. This doesn't feel like a virus. In fact, what's so bizarre is how localized it can be. Some are only feeling this in very specific moments and locations, maybe a specific room in their house. One person tells investigators it was happening at her kitchen window, as if someone was pointing a device at her head. Doctors and psychologists look at some of these people and say, they're not making it up. There is brain trauma here. Something's happening. We just have no idea what it is, let alone who could be doing such a thing. The technical name for this condition is now anomalous health incidents, and these incidents have now happened to many, many members of the U.S. State Department, of our intelligence services, even to staffers for our allies thousands of miles from Havana. The official government position is we can't point the finger anywhere, but now this week, a new set of interviews has ignited serious questions about the American government as some influential people cast doubt on the White House's motives. Let's start the day with ABC's Ann Flaherty, who covers the Pentagon. Ann, what is happening here?
Yeah, so it's been one of the biggest mysteries across the federal government, going on 8 years now. And we thought we got answers last year when the intelligence community released this report that said, we think it's unlikely that a foreign adversary is behind these attacks. Now, there is more than one intelligence agency, and this report noted that there were basically varying degrees of confidence among these intelligence agencies. So it wasn't 100% conclusive, but it really did sort of, you know, cast doubt on this idea of this conspiracy theory that a country like Russia was going to be behind these attacks. But then fast forward to Sunday, these three journalism outlets release the results of what's essentially a five-year investigation. So you have Der Spiegel, CBS 60 Minutes, and then a publication known as The Insider. This is, they call themselves a Russia-focused independent media outlet. And they did a lot of interviews where they say that all these roads seem to point to Russia. In one case, they interview a woman who still works as an FBI counterintelligence agent. She goes by the name as Carrie in their report. And she describes this really sharp drilling pain in her ear at the same time that her battery in her phone essentially swells until it breaks in the case.
Immediately felt pressure, and pressure and pain started coursing from inside my right ear, down my jaw, down my neck, and into my chest.
A really alarming case. She actually passes out on her couch, she says, out of the pain.
And I remember complaining to my colleagues for months after that. I felt like I had early Alzheimer's. Short-term memory, long-term memory, confusing memories, multitasking. My baseline changed. I was not the same person.
And according to reporters investigating this case, now the FBI doesn't confirm this, and I think it's important to note that ABC News has not confirmed this, but according to 60 Minutes and the other reporters, she had been investigating a Russia spy in the area. So 60 Minutes interviewed Greg Ed Green, who's a now retired Army lieutenant colonel, who actually ran the Pentagon investigation into these mysterious health ailments.
There was some angle where they had worked against Russia, focused on Russia, and done extremely well.
And he said, you know, all roads kept leading back to Russia. He said, quote, consistently there is a Russia nexus. And so in his mind, I mean, he kept saying all these officers are top performers. They were people who had worked on senior accounts. They were not, you know, rank and file. And he thought that the government wasn't doing enough to be looking into Russia as a potential culprit.
Well, and so, okay, so you got this sort of doubt being cast on how the government had portrayed this for the last year or so. And then the government comes out yesterday and says, actually, there is one other sort of case that we should talk about, right? Like, what is this most recent potential attack?
Yeah, so after this, all this reporting, the Pentagon comes out and says, well, there was an attack in 2023 in Lithuania. We have a report from a senior defense official.
I can confirm that a senior DOD official experienced symptoms similar to those reported in anomalous health incidents.
What was happening there in 2023 was a NATO summit. The defense secretary also attended, Lloyd Austin. And it was just a year after the full-scale invasion of Russia into Ukraine. And that's what everybody was talking about. So that seemed to be another Russian link that that had existed. Now, the Pentagon, the only thing that they are confirming is that indeed a senior defense official has experienced these symptoms that are consistent with what people call as Havana syndrome.
In terms of any investigation, this is something that the intelligence community is at the forefront of and leading. So I refer you to the IC to speak more to that, particularly ODNI.
But they're not giving us details on who was this person. Do they still have medical problems tied to this? What kind of investigation has the Pentagon done, maybe independent of the intelligence community? They say that they are referring everything to the intelligence community, that they have control of this probe.
Is the government then walking back the claim that, we don't think it was Russia, we don't think it was a nation state or anything?
No. So what we heard from the White House on Monday is, you know, look, there is this 2023 intelligence assessment that says we still believe that it's unlikely that a foreign adversary is behind it.
So the president is standing by that assessment. That's the end of the road.
He's standing by the assessment. I would have to refer you to ODNI.
They can't just say, no, we looked at this and discovered, found there's nothing there. Because that's a lie. It's an absolute lie.
I spoke with the lawyer of the FBI counterintelligence agent who was interviewed by 60 Minutes. Mark Zaid. And one of the things that he told me was, look, they still don't have an explanation for this. You have 1,500 cases across more than 90 countries. That was the estimate that the government gave last year. So you can't tell us what's going on.
Do you feel like, are you talking to people on the inside who say, okay, we're ready to connect the dots?
Oh, they have already. That's the thing.
He thinks that there are leads that they haven't followed. He believes that the government is possibly covering something up, maybe because they don't want to pay out compensation on this, maybe because they don't want to provoke Russia.
If this is the Russians using a device, knowingly harming not only our intelligence officers, but their families and crossing that line, that's an act of war, and we've done nothing that we know of to respond.
So, you know, he's really challenging them, and he's a well-known whistleblower attorney who has a security clearance. He says, you know, look, I don't go down the path of conspiracy theories very often. I tend to avoid them, but this, to him, it just smells like a cover-up.
Unbelievable stuff here. All right, Ann Flaherty reporting from the Pentagon. Thank you so much.
Thanks, Brad.
Next up on Start Here, how much should minimum wage workers be paid? No dumb questions. We'll ask an economist after the break. This episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Have you ever wondered what you would do with an extra hour in your day? I think about this all the time. I'm like, I would be so productive. I'd exercise more, or I'd read a book, or I'd take a nap, like restore myself. We often find ourselves yearning for these extra hours, but the real question is, what would you do if you were making yourself a priority?
Well, how about therapy? It can help you discover what's important so you can make the most of your time. If you've ever benefited from therapy, you know how transformative it can be. It's not just for those who have experienced major trauma. Therapy empowers you to learn positive coping skills, set boundaries, and become the best version of yourself. If you're considering starting therapy, you should give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online. It's designed to be convenient, flexible, and tailored to your schedule. You just fill out a brief questionnaire. You'll be matched with a licensed therapist. And here's the beauty of it. You can switch therapists if you're not finding the right fit. No additional charge. Take the first step. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/start here today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/start here. With daylight saving time upon us, we're looking forward to more daylight and longer days from March through November, and while setting our clocks forward gives us the illusion of more time, it doesn't necessarily help businesses find qualified candidates any sooner. Fear not, there is a solution. ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter is your 24/7 hiring partner working tirelessly to connect you with the right candidate. Once you post your job on ZipRecruiter, it gets distributed to over 100 job sites, ensuring you reach a diverse pool of qualified individuals. Their smart technology scans thousands of resumes, matching you with people whose skills perfectly align with your job requirements. Spring forward with a new hiring partner, ZipRecruiter, and find top talent sooner. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address to try ZipRecruiter for free, ZipRecruiter.com/start here. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/start here. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. For years, fast food workers and retail clerks have been trying to popularize this phrase. The fight for 15.
The fight for 15 is to just to make us a livable wage.
The idea, they say, is to raise the minimum wage, which federally is still just $7.25 an hour. They want to raise it all the way to $15. Well, some states have already gone ahead and done that themselves. This week, California went even further. Yesterday, the minimum wage in California for fast food workers went to $20 an hour, which has sparked blowback from businesses who say there's no way they can afford these wages without big disruptions.
We're no longer hiring, we're not backfilling positions, and I'm ultimately thinking about selling or closing my business.
But is that true? What happens when you start mandating pay raises like this? I want to bring in Professor Michael Reich from UC Berkeley, perhaps the institution that's done the most research on these issues anywhere. He is the chair on the Center for Wage and Employment Dynamics. Professor Reich, I think a decade ago, California's minimum wage was like $8 an hour. Now for these workers, at least, it's 20. How significant is a move like this?
You're right. It was $8 in 2013, and it became $16 on January 1st of this year for all workers. And now it's moved up for fast food workers, another 25% to $20. These are dramatic increases, and they occurred in part because wages were just lagging for a long, long time, for decades before that, through the Great Recession and after. So you could think of this somewhat as catch-up to what other workers are getting. Mm. It is a significant increase. There's over 500,000 workers who are covered by the new policy. On the other hand, the minimum wage is already over $18 in the San Francisco Bay Area, and it's over $17 in LA. In-N-Out Burger has a minimum wage in San Francisco of $23 an hour. Doesn't sound so dramatic. And then when you think about the fact that labor costs are only one-third of operating costs, that means that a hamburger that's $5 would increase in price to $5.10. The blowback on prices has been enormous, but a lot of the price increases that we've seen in restaurants and fast foods didn't come about because of minimum wages. They also went up in states that haven't increased their minimum wage, where, as you say, it's still $7.25. So I'm not saying the increase is only going to be a dime. I'm just going to say the minimum wage part of it would only be a dime on a $5 hamburger.
Why fast food, by the way? That's being singled out here specifically.
The main reason is that the wages are lower in fast food than any other major industry, maybe excluding childcare. And here you've got a group of employers that are dominated by 9 or so big businesses, McDonald's, Starbucks, and so forth. And they have done very well in the past decade. Sales have gone up. Profits have gone up. they can afford to pay more than they do. But they've had the power to keep wages low, and the minimum wage increases are designed to overcome that power.
And I feel like you kind of outlined sort of how much costs go up, but I do feel like the basic argument from companies, it's a pretty simple argument to understand, right? Like it's something like my parents or my cousins would easily like come back to me with and say, if you raise wages, especially this quickly, we either have to raise prices or we got to lay off workers and force everyone else on the staff to do more. Is that not right?
It's not right because, first of all, a business person is saying, well, I can't raise prices because I'll lose business if I do. But what that ignores is that this is a shock to costs that's uniform throughout the industry. In other words, every employer is facing the same wage increase. And therefore, a price increase is going to be the response that's common among a lot of these business people.
Oh, like you don't go down the road to the other fast food place because they also probably raise their prices.
They have to because they also have an increase in the wage that they're experiencing. And, you know, these are industries with a turnover every year of 100, 150%. So they have vacancies all the time. This is going to help them recruit employees, attract employees, and hold on to them. And that they would rather fill the vacancies than lay off people. Because if they lay off people, they can't sell as many hamburgers. And guess what? At 10 cents more, they're not going to lose a lot of sales of hamburgers. And their sales are actually going to go up. Their revenue is going to go up with the price increase.
I see. That's interesting because you do have to spend money to do the recruitment, right? So in this case, you're almost saying that like you give that money straight to the employees you have instead of the HR person is going to have to go and find more employees. Does this change, though, when we talk about small businesses or different types of businesses? Because you could imagine this becoming like the de facto minimum wage for all of California. Then it's 22, then it's 25, and prices just keep going up for all the businesses that are not huge conglomerations.
Yeah, well, actually, I've done a recent study that is in, you know, under review in a big journal on size of business and minimum wage. And I wanted to see what happened, but it turns out that the responses were pretty similar across all employer sizes. None of them were likely to lay people off, but that was just as true for the small businesses as for the large businesses.
Really interesting. All right. Professor Michael Reich from Berkeley, thank you so much for the time. Really appreciate it.
You're welcome.
So for years, there was this big debate over stuff called spice and K2, synthetic marijuana, it was called. And this was unnerving to medical professionals. Considering how much enforcement there's been of marijuana over the years, wasn't it weird that you could just pick up this man-made chemical, which produced some of the same effects, at your local smoke shop? Well, if everyone's concerned about a marijuana-like drug, what about something that mimics the effects of prescription-level antidepressants? Pills that some critics are referring to as gas station heroin. ABC's Rena Roy has been reporting on this for ABC News Live. Rena, what is this stuff?
So, Brad, this over-the-counter drug has been dubbed gas station heroin because you can buy it at a gas station or, you know, your local bodega at a convenience store, and it produces opioid-like effects. What it actually is, though, is a drug. It's a pill called tianeptine, and it goes by all different names. Different brands like Tiana Red and Zaza. And you can buy it for about anywhere from $50 to $100. It's actually marketed by one brand as happiness in a bottle, as sort of this wellness product to help with anxiety and mood, as sort of maybe an antidepressant.
Its antidepressant activities are probably more just because you get sort of an opioid type of high.
And if you haven't heard of this stuff or seen this stuff, it comes in colorful little bottles. They're lined up on shelves. There's different varieties, you know, extra strength, regular, Tiana versus Tiana Red.
Do you guys have Zaza?
Yeah.
Okay. Where is it? Oh, here.
We walked into a store, a local bodega here in New York City. We saw it lined up all on the shelves. So you really see it all over the place, except for the states where it's banned in nearly about a dozen states.
And so, I mean, what does it do? What are the effects?
Well, it's really advertised as something that's really just supposed to make you feel good. It's supposed to relax you. It's supposed to create happiness, as one brand says, happiness in a bottle. But what we're really hearing is some pretty scary stories about it and people who have been surprised about the effects that it can create, given that it is something that's bought over the counter.
We went in his room and he was on the bed
and he still had his computer up, and he had a plate with pizza rolls on it in the bed next to him, and it was like he was in a deep sleep. We didn't know at the time, but he was already gone.
You know, we spoke with two different families down south in Alabama and Mississippi who've lost their sons after taking tianeptine.
All I knew that he had took them pills for a headache, but I had no idea that they would have took his life.
Christy Terry in Alabama says her 19-year-old son, Jonathan, who was a college student studying business and theater, she says he died from that drug. He was someone that suffered from migraines and had walked into a convenience store looking for Tylenol or Advil just to help with one of his usual migraines, and instead was given so-called gas station heroin.
He told his dad that they had recommended him to him.
He ended up taking, over the course of one night, 12 of the 15 pills in that bottle. That bottle had suggested only 2 pills a day. So Christy found her son unconscious. It was, to her knowledge, the only time that he had ever really taken a drug before. And that's what ended up happening. So we've been hearing different stories like this from different families.
So it was ruled accidental. Is there any doubt in your mind that tianeptine killed your son?
None whatsoever. None. If it wasn't for this little bottle right here, Christopher would still be here.
Tracy is another mother who tells us her son, Christopher, died from tianeptine as well.
I remember him telling me that he felt closest to God outdoors, you know, nature. He loved nature.
Tracy's son, Christopher, was 29 years old, and he died almost exactly 4 years after Jonathan. And Christopher was someone who struggled with addiction to tianeptine. He was looking for ways to kind of overcome depression, and so he turned to tianeptine. And he had even told his mom at one point when they had a conversation about tianeptine that he didn't think anything would happen to him because it was something that was sold, you know, over the counter. So Tracy had given Christopher a couple of bucks and said, hey, you know, pick yourself up, go get some coffee, you know, go to the local store and get yourself some breakfast. You know, he was struggling with depression. And that is when she says he purchased a bottle of tianeptine, and she didn't hear from him for several days.
And I went inside, and there he was. He'd been there a couple of days. His little face had started changing colors.
And she went to his apartment, and that's when she found him unresponsive.
I laid down with him, and I scratched his back, and I rubbed his hair. He always wanted me to play with my hair, Mom. I scratched my back. And I did. One last time. And I gave him back to God.
Wait, and so just to hear these stories, it's surprising then to hear that, what, this is legal, federally at least. This stuff is just fully legal?
Right, federally it is. But it is banned in nearly a dozen states. So it just depends on what state you're in.
Oh, I won't rest until it is banned nationally. You know, that's my goal.
Christopher's mom, Tracy, she was actually there as the governor in Mississippi signed a bill banning tianeptine.
When I started doing them, I was like, there's no way that they're this bad for you if they're selling them over the counter.
But before that, we spoke to Hannah, a 22-year-old nursing student, and she put thousands of miles on her car. She was living in Alabama, but she was driving to Mississippi before it got banned there so that she could get her hands on it when she was dealing with addiction.
It was miserable. I've withdrawn from heroin. I've withdrawn from pain pills. I've withdrawn, you know, pain pills that were come with fentanyl. And they don't even measure close to what those withdrawals from tianeptine felt like.
And so now we are seeing several Congress members coming together. They are urging more action at the federal level when it comes to this drug.
Yeah, what is happening medically? Like, is there a consensus from doctors over what this drug is doing and whether it's dangerous?
So it is used as an antidepressant drug in some countries, but experts that we've spoken with say there are really a lot more risks to taking this than there are benefits.
It absolutely relaxes you, and your body starts craving it very quickly, to the point where you actually need to take, you know, several pills throughout the day Otherwise, you get into a really bad withdrawal patterns.
Dr. William Rushton, he specializes in emerging drugs of abuse at the University of Alabama in Birmingham, where Jonathan actually went to school. He says he finds tianeptine really contains few upsides and there is a really easy potential for addiction.
People that say that, you know, tianeptine can be just as dangerous as eating an orange. Well, we're not putting people that are eating oranges on a regular basis in our intensive care units.
He finds, again, that this is more dangerous than it is helpful.
What do the makers of these drugs say? Because I imagine if these are used as prescription medication in some other countries, I imagine they're not doing this thinking, oh, like we're trying to hurt or kill people.
Yeah, well, we chatted with a few former manufacturers, and they really don't see anything wrong with this drug.
There are other people that are benefiting from this product. And, you know, to just turn around and start banning products without having solid meaning behind it, then, you know, where does it stop?
They essentially say that these claims about death are lies. So one of the manufacturers actually texted us in defense of this product, you know, insisting the product is safe, helpful even. And so I read it out loud and he basically said it's impossible to overdose on tianeptine.
The ability to overdose is almost impossible with tianeptine, and the news agencies making all these death claims are simply lies.
They believe that they're really helping people with stress and anxiety relief, and so they really don't see anything wrong with tianeptine.
Right, and what's so scary here is I think you get a lot of Americans who don't know what this stuff is. They would not recognize it. It's not approved by any U.S. medical agency, and yet there are people willing to go across state lines in what they call kind of an addictive state just to get their hands on it. Rena Roy, great reporting. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Brad.
Okay, one more quick break. When we come back, they signed up for an African cruise, but they thought they'd be traveling over water. One last thing is next.
We've got the exclusive view behind the table. Every day, right after the show, while the topics are still hot, the ladies go deeper into the moments that make the view, the view. The Views Behind the Table podcast. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.
And one last thing. I've never taken a big international cruise. I've never had the pleasure. But what I am truly obsessed with are the videos of people showing up late to their ship's departures. Videos like this are everywhere on social media. People sarcastically applauding passengers who show up late after spending too much time shopping at the local port. Sometimes someone goes viral by getting left behind.
My booking number is...
But this week, this went next level. Jill and Jay Campbell were on a cruise up the coast of Africa. It's run by Norwegian Cruise Lines. And as part of it, they stop on the island nation of Sao Tome. The Campbells apparently went off on an island tour that started to drag long.
They were like, our time is getting really short. They were like, no problem, we can get you back within an hour.
They spoke to their hometown ABC affiliate, WPDE, in South Carolina, and said while they called ahead to say they were late, the ship left without them.
The harbor master tried to call the ship. The captain refused the call.
Now, up through here, I don't have a ton of sympathy. Like, hundreds of people need to get places. They can't all be waiting for whatever tour you signed yourself up for. But listen to the rest of the story.
So a Tome Coast Guard loaded all 8 passengers on a boat and took them to the anchored ship. They say that the captain told the Coast Guard to take the passengers back to the island.
That's right. The ship apparently is chilling out at sea. The local government spends the resources to ferry these people out there. And the cruise ship says, nah, sorry, we'll see you at the next port. Well, the next port is in the Gambia, 6 countries and 15 hours away. The Campbells say half the group is elderly, one person has a heart condition, another is a paraplegic, and despite all that, this entire group made it to the next port on time, only to be told the tide was too low for the cruise ship and it would remain out at sea. Norwegian Cruise Line said in a statement that while this was an unfortunate situation, the departure times are clear and guests are responsible for meeting them. Now the Campbells group is getting a different type of tour of Africa. They are now racing to Senegal, hoping this captain will let them on there, or at least forget who they were in the first place. Kind of makes me go, like, this is the type of African tour I'd be interested in. Like an amazing race sort of situation where you're in the buses, the vans, you're interacting with locals. Then you find out the Campbells have spent $5,000 over the course of a few days. Not the relaxing experience they were looking for. More on all these stories at abcnews.com or the ABC News app. I'm Brad Milkey. See you tomorrow.
Hey, I'm Andy Mitchell, a New York Times bestselling author.
And I'm Sabrina Kohlberg, a morning television producer. We're moms of toddlers and best friends of 20 years.
And we both love to talk about being parents, yes, but also pop culture.
So we're combining our two interests by talking to celebrities, writers, and fellow scholars of TV and movies.
Cinema, really.
About what we all can learn from the fictional moms we love to watch.
From ABC Audio and Good Morning America, Pop Culture Moms is out now wherever you listen to podcasts.